So let's see where we can begin. You know that there's a Mishnah here on Daf Vav Amud Aleph in Masechtas Sota, and the Mishnah lists five scenarios in which she cannot drink from the Mei Marim, even though there was Kini and Stira. And the Gemara introduces Rav Sheshes. Now, we're going to see that Rav Yosef rejects Rav Sheshes. So our subject for today is to try to get into this machlokas, this controversy between Rav Sheshes and Rav Yosef. So that if you like to write notes, you know, the top line on your page should say Rav Sheshes versus Rav Yosef. So you'll know what the title is for today's discussion. Now Rav Sheshes is going to tell us that if there were Edim, if there were witnesses at the time of her stira, meaning when she went into a private place, oh, thanks for shedding light on this, and she committed adultery, and there are two witnesses to testify to that effect, then the Mei Marim, these waters are ineffective. And Rav Sheshes is going to derive this from our Mishnah. Now, let's understand why this statement of Rav Sheshes is very far-reaching. It's very revolutionary. It's what we call in yeshivas a big chiddush. It's a real breakthrough. It's not something that we would call simple. It's not readily apparent. What happens is, there was kinui, there was stira, the husband brought his wife to the Beis HaMikdash, and she drank from the Mei Marim. Did she survive?
Yes,
she survived. So that's room for celebration, is it not? She's alive and well. Now two Edom come in and say that she committed adultery. In that very stira, she went ahead and committed adultery.
You would think they're Edom Zomimim.
I wouldn't call them Edom Zomimim. I would call them Shakronim. What does that mean, Shakronim? Miloshon Sheker?
Oh, false.
Correct. They were false witnesses.
What Zomimim is?
Zomimim is something else. Zomimim means that two witnesses come in and say about the first two witnesses, you were with us in a different place. Ah. That's a very, very specific. We have an entire Perek in Shas, excuse me, that's dedicated to this case of Edom Zomimim. We're not talking about Edom Zomimim. I remember my Rebbe Zichron Levracha used to take attendance every day. It's a good idea. I think we should take attendance. And what happened is that he used to go in alphabetical order down the line, so that when he got to, let's say, the letter C, he asked for Cohen, and Cohen's not there. So he takes a pen and he crosses his name off the attendance sheet, because if he missed the shiur, he no longer has rights to join the shiur. Then 5 minutes later, Cohen shows up, and the rav is ready down the line. He's up to number S. He's asking for Schwartz. So Cohen says, "Rebbe, I'm here." So Rav Soloveitchik says, "Ba harug baraglov." That's a sugya in Masechta Sanhedrin, where two witnesses testified that Reuven killed Shimon, and then Shimon shows up in Bezin, and he's alive and well. So we know that the Edom perjured themselves, and they were testifying falsely. In any event, what we have here is a case where it seems obvious that the Edom falsified their testimony. How do I have proof positive that they're telling us a bluff? Because if they were correct and she was guilty of this adultery, what should have happened? She should have died by drinking from the Bei Marim. The Bei Marim is the Torah's guarantee that we can test this woman and examine her and determine whether she was guilty or not guilty. If she is right, we're going to see.
Just for that person who she was.
Again, we're talking about this case of Kinui and Stira, and the Edom testify that she went in alone. Yes. Yeah. So again, you know, just let's. Rabosa, as I said to you last time, you aren't there, Yehuda. Hold your questions for a few minutes. I'll tell you why. Because I get 1 hour to teach Sota the entire week. I'm learning a couple of different mesechtas. I don't want to boast. I don't want to tell you how many different mesechtas I'm learning. Okay, I'm teaching Chulin, Be'iyun, and Bekiyas. I'm teaching Sanhedrin, 2 shiurim a day, Be'iyun, Bekiyas. I'm teaching Bar Mitzvah on a daily basis. Sota is kind of like a cherry on top, okay? Whoa. So let me try to see what we can do. We're not going to test ourselves on the entire mesechta. Right now, our case is the following. Okay? We have it? We have two witnesses testifying that in the stira, she actually went ahead and had this adulterous relationship. But the problem is that she already drank from the Bei Marim, and the Bei Marim proved that she was guiltless, that she did not commit this adultery. Because had she committed the adultery, she would have been blown up to smithereens. So the fact that she survived means that the Torah is testifying that she's guiltless. So now we have a contradiction. And I'll ask you for an intuitive answer to this question. If there was a testimony of the Torah and the two Jews who were testifying against the Torah, whose testimony would you rely on? I don't hear a word. You know, you gentlemen are very good at asking questions, but when I need answers, I don't get any answers.
I'm learning.
God is testifying that she's guiltless. Two Jews, we'll call them Reuven and Shimon, are testifying that she was guilty. Who do you rely on? Do you rely on God, or do you rely on the two witnesses?
Always rely on God.
All right, great. Now we're on the same. We're on the same team. Comes along Rav Sheshes, and he says, No. These Edom are not falsifying the truth. She was guilty of adultery. So what question do we have to ask now?
Why didn't she die?
Says Rav Sheshes, you know why she didn't die?
Because her husband has been.
Because the waters do not have the power to examine her. Why don't the waters have power to examine her? Because the Torah says that the waters are only granted that supernatural power from the divine being to examine her only in the condition that aid law, that there are no witnesses to our crime. If there are witnesses to our crime, says Rav Sheshes, then the waters are ineffective. So if I have now a contradiction, I'm going to use the word an apparent contradiction, because I don't want anyone to walk out of here hearing my Havamina and they'll think it's the Maskana, but an apparent contradiction between God, who's testifying that she's guiltless because the waters tested her, and the testimony of Reuven v'Shimon that she's guilty. Says Rav Sheshes, we believe the Edom. How can you believe the Edom against the testimony of God? And the answer is, because in this case, the waters are ineffective. And Rav Sheshes is going to insist that if we learn our Mishnah properly, he, Rav Sheshes, will prove to us that if there are two witnesses who saw her adultery, then the waters are ineffective. So I don't have to give an answer to the question why she survived the drinking of the waters, because the waters are ineffective. Why are they ineffective? Because she committed adultery in the presence of two witnesses. This is kind of what I call counterintuitive. You would think that if she committed the adultery, then certainly the waters would blow her up. That's where Rav Sheshes' revolution comes in. And Rav Yosef is not going to tolerate this, but Rav Sheshes holds that the waters, in the case where she was guilty of a crime of adultery in the presence of two witnesses, the Mayim, the waters, are ineffective. And the fact that she survived it has nothing to do with God's testimony that she was innocent and not guilty. She may very well have been guilty, and that we're going to find out from two witnesses. But the waters themselves are ineffective. So let's take a look at the Gemara. Hamilsa, this statement that we're about to present, Omar Lon Rav Sheshes, Rav Sheshes presented this, the Aner Lon, and he enlightened our eyes, Einin means our eyes, Mimas Nisan, from our Mishnah. Meaning that he's going to derive this radical, far-reaching conclusion about the ineffective Mayim Marim from our Mishnah. And in doing so, he's going to shed a new light on the Mishnah. The Mishnah, as we said, lists five cases of a woman who doesn't drink the Mayim Marim. We're going to focus our attention on, I think it's the third case, let's just go to the second case of the on the list, that says Shebo Edim Shehit Mea, which means that two witnesses testified that she was guilty of this adulterous relationship. Sota Sheyeshla Edim Bimedinas Hayam, meaning we let the Sota drink from the Meimarim. Why do we do so? She had kinui, she had stira. Are there witnesses?
No.
No. Yes, there are witnesses, but they're not here. Where are they? They're out there in Medina Sayam. They're out there in Japan. You know, it's going to be a while until they show up. Right now, we don't have Edim. And the halacha is that if we don't have Edim, and we don't know whether she's guilty or not, she's going to drink from the Meimarim, and that's going to examine and determine whether she's innocent or guilty. However, says Rav Sheshes, even though she went ahead and she drank from the Meimarim, that, as it turns out, was meaningless, was totally meaningless. She could have drank a cup of hot water, which reminds me I should drink a cup of hot water, which doesn't have any spooky supernatural powers to it. It's just a cup of hot water. That's all she drank. Again, it was a little bit bitter, but
and you didn't blow up.
Of course I didn't blow up, because there's no supernatural powers inherent in the water. Why are there no superpowers inherent in the water? The Omer Kra, because the Pasuk says that when do these waters have an efficacy? When are they powerfully endowed with supernatural powers? That's only the Nisra V'Nidma V'Ein Einba, because there were no witnesses to our crime. The Torah is saying that if there were no witnesses to the crime, and you have no way of going through the normal judicial process, and in Beis Din proving and establishing beyond a shadow of a doubt that she's guilty, I'm going to give you a better method to establish that she's guilty. She's going to get blown to bits, because she's going to drink from the Meimarim. The Lekha de Yodale, because we don't know whether she's guilty or not. But what happens in a case where we could clarify that she's guilty? We haven't been able to do that yet, because where are the Edim at this point? Yeah. They're out in Japan. La Fuki Ha De Ha Ika De Yodaba. Because in this case, where we have Edim, again, we don't have them yet, but they're about to show up in Beis Din, then the Torah says, I'm not going to endow these waters with any supernatural power to examine this woman. The waters are like drinking a cup of hot water, as we said before. They're totally meaningless. And therefore, when she committed this adultery, and she did it in the presence of two witnesses. Again, you ask me very often, vosepis, you know, that there are two witnesses. So I say that there were two witnesses who saw her through a peephole. You know, they were wondering, why is she going into this private place over here? Now, the very moment that she commits this adultery in such a way that we have the judicial ability through the process of testimony of establishing her guilt beyond a shadow of a doubt, at that moment, the Meimarim are determined to be meaningless. Again, they were not meaningful yesterday when she drank from the Meimarim, but we didn't know that. We thought yesterday, hey, she's guiltless. She survived the Meimarim. What we didn't realize was that those weren't Meimarim. What were they? A cup of hot water. Everybody got that? They were totally devoid of any power to examine her.
Lethal.
And how do we know this? We know it from our Mishnah, says Rav Sheshes. The honor law aided me, Masnisen, and he enlightened us and opened our eyes by reading the Mishnah. The Mishnah tells us of the following cases in which a woman will not be able to eat truma. And I'm not going to go into this. I think you did this very thoroughly with Rabbi Myers. You don't need me for this. And one of the cases is Shebola Edim Shitmeya, that there are witnesses who testify that she was guilty as accused of adultery. Says Rav Sheshes, let's try to analyze this Mishnah. The Mishnah is telling me that amongst the five cases that a woman doesn't drink for the Meimarim, one of them is where Edim testified that she was guilty. The Asu Edim Emas, he's asking a rhetorical question, when did these witnesses come? Edim, if we're going to assume, Mekame de Tishte, Mekame means before. That's why the first of the three Bavas, who knows what it's called? Bava? Kama, because Kama means the first. Mekame is a verb conjugated in the word Kama. If we're going to assume that the Edim came into Beis Din before, Mekame de Tishte, before she drank. So then, the reason why she can't eat truma from now on to the rest of her life is because she's called a zona. And again, we're not going to go into that. That's something that you discussed at great length with Rabbi Myers. If a woman has an adulterous relationship, she can never, ever eat truma for the rest of her life. And even if she repents, she's a zona, and that's it, she can't eat truma. So there's no reason for the Mishnah to tell me that the reason why she can't eat truma is because we don't have the possibility of clearing her reputation through the process of drinking from the Meimarim. The reason why she is excluded from truma and indefinitely disqualified from truma is because she has the status of a zona. There were two Edom who testified. Ella, but rather Lebasar Dish say, but rather these witnesses came in after she already drank from the bitter waters. And now I would say the following, that the waters clarified beyond the shadow of a doubt through their power of examination that she was guiltless. The Edom now come into Beis Din and they testify that she was guilty. Throw out these Edom, they're false Edom. And what's the answer of Rav Sheshes? They're not false Edom. Why not? Who can tell me? Why did she survive the Meimarim?
Because
they were ineffective. You have to remember that word, ineffective. Don't give me any other word. Just write down on your page, ineffective. Otherwise, the whole shiur is worthless. Mm-hmm. Everything we're going to do for an hour, Chas V'Sholem, will be worthless unless you write down on a piece of paper. I will give you the pen and the paper. Write down the word, ineffective. Okay, then? So whenever I ask you about these Meimarim, you should always give me the word ineffective. So let's get a little quiet together. And when I count to three, everyone is going to say ineffective. One, two, three.
Ineffective.
Ineffective. Okay, last week we had Zika. Who remembers Zika? Okay, when I count to three, we're all going to say Zika together. One, two, three.
Zika.
Okay? And I promised you that I'm going to wake you up in the middle of the night. And you're not going to say to me, Rabbi Berzel, what are you doing in my bedroom at 3 a.m.? You're going to say Zika. Because the whole of Masechet Yevamos, and it overlaps with Sota, is based on that one word, Zika. The whole sugya of Rav Sheshes, we'll count again, is based on one word. One, two, three.
Zika.
Ineffective. You fell into my trap, Yaakov. See, I was able to fool you. You can't fool a Shweiki. That's not Shayach. Okay. In any event, so this is the Shita of Rav Sheshes. Now, here the Mishnah is telling me a great chiddush. And what's the chiddush? Says the Gemara, if we can accept the principle of Rav Sheshes, that these waters are ineffective, That's called Eina Mayim Bod Kimosa. The waters will not examine her. Shapir, everything's good. Now I understand why we believe the witnesses. And the reason why we don't throw out these witnesses, after all, she survived the Maimarom, is because the waters were ineffective. Ella Iamit Mayim Bod Kimosa. If you're going to disagree with me and say, look, at the time that she drank from the bitter waters, there were no Eidim, so the drinking from the bitter waters would be an examination, is then Tigle Milsa, we now see clearly, Lamafreya, that Sadi Shakri Ninu, that these Eidim are not Eidim Zomimim, we don't want to use that word, because that's a very technical term, but they are Sadi, they're Eidim Shakri. Shakri means they perjured themselves, they're false witnesses. Is that's what the Mishnah wants to tell me, that the waters are, everybody, ineffective. And why are they ineffective? Because the Torah says that the waters of Sotah are only effective if Eidba, if there were no witnesses. If we have no way, independent way of clarifying whether she's guilty or not, then we'll have to rely on the supernatural power that God vests in the waters. But if we can clarify whether she's guilty or not through the normal, let's call it judiciary procedures, then the waters are ineffective. And therefore, in this lechora, this apparent contradiction between the fact that on the one hand she drank from the Meirom and survived, and the fact that the Eidim testified that she was guilty, how do we reconcile those two? The answer is, because Ein Eidba, because when are the waters effective? Only if there are no witnesses. Here we have a tremendous debate amongst the commentaries, which we're not going to get into. What would be a case where only one witness testified that she was guilty of adultery? And if you might recall, with regard to Stira, we said that if there was one witness who testified that she had this relationship, then we believe one witness. Why? Because there's already a great deal of circumstantial evidence that's called Raglayim L'dov. We have both Kini and Stira. But in any event, the simple understanding of Agamara of Rav Sheshis is that two witnesses, no less than two witnesses, came into Beis Din. They testified that she was guilty as accused. They saw her committing adultery. In such a case, we now understand retroactively that the waters were not effective. They were not supernatural. They did not have the power to examine her, but rather it was simply a cup of hot water. Now, Rabosai, what's the other option? Is there another option, another logical possibility to reconcile the testimony of the Eidim with the fact that she survived drinking the Maimarim? In other words, let's play the devil's advocate. Let's reject Rav Sheshis, as we'll soon see that Rav Yosef in fact did. Let's say that the waters are effective, even in a case where there are two Eidim. Well, now we have a real problem, because she survived the waters, and yet we have two Eidim that testify that what? That she was guilty.
So Rav Sheshis is wrong.
No, it means that...
No, on the contrary. This would prove that Rav Sheshis is right, because the only way of reconciling this is to say that the waters were ineffective. Is there another possibility? That's what I'm trying to test your brains. That the waters were effective. The Eidim are not perjuring themselves. She was, as the witnesses testify, guilty. And yet the waters, even though they're effective, did not kill her. How do you reconcile that?
Because the husband is guilty himself of the same thing. So
We discussed, Jeremy and I discussed this on Sunday. What day of the week was it? Monday?
Monday, I think it was Monday, yeah.
It was Monday. I don't know if you gentlemen knew. I gave a shiur here on Monday. Nobody showed up except for good old Jeremy. Okay, I wasn't insulted. I was just devastated. But
Jeremy didn't tell anybody.
It was supposedly announced. I mean, I got it in a WhatsApp from Rabbi, the Holy Rabbi. In any event, Rabbi, listen carefully. There's ample reason to believe that the husband was not guilty of any hanky-panky. That has to do with the Mishnah later on, that he's accompanied by two scholars to make sure that he doesn't overcome his desire to impassion and have a relationship with her. But there's another possibility, Rabbi Osai.
Well, it doesn't take effect straight away.
Well, yes and no. You're a step ahead of me, Jeremy, but you have to backtrack a little.
She's got other midot that she's
excellent. Not midos, but what? Schus. She has a merit. This is going to be the cornerstone of Rav Yosef's disagreement with Rav Sheish, as Rav Yosef is going to say, I don't have to reconcile her survival after she drank from the waters with the fact that the Eidim testified that she's guilty. You know why she survived the waters? Because she has some sort of a sechut. So if until this point in our discussion the main word was ineffective, now you have to put another word on your page, and again I'm going to give you my pen, and that is called sechut.
Merit.
Zion Chaf Vav Tav. Well, not exactly Schus Avos. Okay, now if you have a Gemara Sota, you'll have to fast forward to page Chaf Beis, I believe it is. Let's see if I'm right. No, let's talk about page Chaf. Okay then, page Chaf. Can you find that? You're almost there.
And what are the zechus?
So let's see. Is there such a thing as zechus? That's going to be a major controversy amongst the Tanaim back at the time of the Mishnah. And we're going to have to compare this Mishnah on page 20 with the next Mishnah on page 22. So, you know, you might want to have two fingers on two different Mishnahs. But in any event, you know what? Let's go backwards if you don't mind. Let's do later and further. Let's look at Reb Shimon. Reb Shimon is on page Chaf Beis Amud Beis. Okay then? 22b, as they would say it in art scroll terms. Okay, and what does Reb Shimon say? It's about two-thirds down the page. You have it? Reb Shimon Omer Ein Schus Tola B'mayim Hamorim. Rav Shimon says there's no such thing. I deny the whole institutional enterprise, which we're going to soon see was codified in the Mishnah earlier on page Chaf. We're going to go backwards. That she can have a merit as chus, and therefore she'll survive the waters. We must assume, listen carefully, according to Rav Shimon, that it's an all or nothing proposition. Either you believe in the waters, or you don't believe in the waters. And if you're a Torah observant Jew, and you have faith in the Ribono Shel Olam, and you read the Parsha Naso of Sota, then you know that the waters will be effective. There's no if, ands, and buts. The waters will be effective, says Rabbi Shimon. In all situations, there's no such thing as Chus Tola. And he gives two reasons why he's absolutely convinced. Let's focus on his second reason, which is called, if you fast forward to, what line would it be in the Mishnah Motzi Shemra? It's about line 5 or 6. Do you see such a line that starts with the word Motzi?
In the Mishnah?
In the Mishnah, on Daf Chav Beis Amud Beis of Reb Shimon.
10 lines, sir.
Umotzi ato shemra ala tahoros sheshasu. This is a mind-boggling concept. If you're going to tell me that whether the waters are effective or not effective is conditional, it's not absolute, maybe I should use the word relative, it depends whether she has a schus or doesn't have a schus, then you've basically embarrassed all the women who have ever drunk from the Meimarim and established themselves as healthy, well, and tahoros. Tahoros means pure. Innocent, pure, they were not guilty. And now, wait a minute. What do you mean they weren't guilty? Maybe they were guilty. And the reason why they didn't die was because of the schus. It's got to be absolute. It's got to be black or white. There's no gray area. There's no room for ifs, ands, and buts. Maybe she has some sort of a schus, some sort of merit. Because if you're going to tell me that she survived even though she was guilty because of merit X, Y, or Z, then you've basically undermined the whole process of drinking, because the purpose of drinking is to establish the innocence of a woman. We call it the purity of a woman. And all these ladies, again, I don't know how many there are in Jewish history. We'll have to Google that. But let's say there were 15 ladies. I'll just throw out a number. 15 ladies who were accused and drank for the Memorarim, and 10 out of the 15 survived it. And you and I think that these 10 women have a right to boast that what?
They're pure.
They were innocent. Nay, you don't have the right to say that they were innocent. Maybe they were guilty. Why did they survive? Because of his chus. It cannot be. It cannot be. Then Rav Shimon gives another answer, which is psychological, very profound. Every woman thinks that she has a schus. That has to do with a psychology called self-confidence. Now, I don't know how many people here in this room would claim about themselves that they have self-confidence. We live in a society in which low self-image is an absolute makas medina. It's a plague. But let's assume that each and every one of us here have self-confidence. So a woman believes that she has a schus. Is she afraid of drinking for the Beit Merarim? Says Rav Shimon, the whole purpose of the Beit Merarim is not just to examine her. It's also meant to be, maybe we should add this word, a deterrent. It frightens the life out of a woman who is guilty of Kidian Stira. She doesn't have to be afraid. She's self-confident. Nothing's going to happen to me. Okay, I fooled around a little bit, whatever it was, but I'm not going to die for the Beit Merarim. Why not? I have a schus. My Alta Baba, my great-grandmother, was the author of Tzenarena. You know, she was Shnei Asara. She created the whole Aguda movement, you know, for teaching Torah to women. I don't have to worry. So when you have something strong and you want to, what's the word I'm looking for, you know? You have a heavy, a powerful, you know, chemical substance, and you just
dilute it.
Excellent,
oh.
Yehuda.
Oh.
You had to come from Matzpei Yericho just to give me that word diluted. So you've diluted the entire process of Mei Merarim, says Rav Shimon, for two reasons. Number one, why does she have to be afraid of Mei Merarim? She knows she's guilty, but she thinks she has a schus. And number two, you've really ruined the reputation of all those women who've drunk from the Memorim in the past and have proven their innocence. They have not proven their innocence. These are the two arguments of Rav Shimon. Now we go back to the Mishnah on Daf Chaf. And we're going to see the opposite opinion of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi in the Mishnah on Daf Chaf. Now, we're on Daf Chaf, which is called 20A. I see that in the art scroll it's called 20A3. Okay? That's not going to help anybody who doesn't have the art scroll. Which, by the way, reminds me, you know, they're about to start Daf Yomi, I think, next week. So let me know if you're interested in learning a little Daf Yomi, depending on your schedule. Okay.
What?
Now,
what are you doing here?
I don't know. I'm not doing it unless there's an interest. You'll tell me what your flexibility is.
I'll put my name down.
Okay, you'll tell me what your flexibility is.
So evening.
On a continuous daily basis.
Evening.
I would do it, let's say, 6 out of 7 days. I don't know about Shabbos. Shabbos, I need a rest. I need a rest on Shabbos. I'll find someone to substitute for me.
Day or evening? Morning or evening?
I don't know. I'm pretty flexible. All right, anyway. Let's get back to our mission. I'm sorry, I got off on a tangent here.
Yeah, towards the end.
Okay, now, in order to find the part of the Mishnah that's most important for us, we'll take a look at the page, right, that's Chaf. You'll see the Mishnah starts about 10 lines down from the top, but it's a very, very long, extensive, and profound Mishnah. We're only going to isolate a few words in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, and you'll see maybe about, let's say, 10 lines down in the Mishnah, which is about 20 lines down from the top of the page, a line that starts with the word Omrim. If you found that, raise your hand. All right, two people found it. All right,
Omrim.
Three, so we have a Zimun. So let's continue. After the word Omrim, it says Hotziua. It says Hotziua Shalotitma Lazara. They, after she drinks the Memorarium, they take her out of the Azara. That's the Holy of Holies, because she might die, and we don't want a dead body to defile the Azara. But then it says, "If yesh la zchus, haisa tolala." Tolala means we have a delay process, and although the waters have this metaphysical power of killing her when she's guilty, sometimes because of a zchus, the deity, the divine being, is going to somehow reduce or limit the power of
postpone
and delay the power of the Meimarim to kill her immediately, and she will survive. Now we have to ask a whole bunch of questions. She's guilty, yet she has a schutz. So how long is she going to survive? Endlessly? At some point, you know, guilt has to catch up with you. Second question, what is this schutz? I mean, as I said before, just because her great-grandmother was the founder of the movement of what's it called? Not Tzedarim, I meant to say Beis Yaakov. Beis Yaakov movement. So what exactly is the schus? That those are some of the questions. Another question, which is itself a great controversy amongst the Tanoim, is in this case of schus, will there be some sort of immediate damaging power or impact of the Meimarim? In other words, it could be she's not going to be feeling too well, she's very weak, but she'll be able to schlep along for years. I don't know if you've ever experienced, usually it's common, unfortunately, in cancer patients that, you know, they slow down if they have cancer. They can, you know, because of the treatments today of cancer, you can survive for a good couple of years. I had a Rebbe in high school who had lung cancer. I mean, it was terrible. But he was able to schlep himself to the yeshiva for a month until he passed on. He was only 64 years old. I always cry when I think of him. He was my Rebbe in high school. In any event, so what happens is A or B. These are the two possibilities. There's going to be a great debate about this. Because the schus is it A, she'll feel great. She's going to walk out of the Meimarim dancing and doing a, what do you call that, a tap dance. Or no, B, she's going to be really weak, but she'll schlep along and she'll perhaps survive for 2 years or maybe even 3 years.
Which is still an indication of her guilt then.
Oh, and that's going to be the question here in Rav Yosef. Omar le Rav Yosef. Okay, is everybody out of the place? We are now on Daf Vav Aleph. And in the, if you count from the wide lines up, you should be able to count approximately, I'd say about 10 lines up from the wide lines. And you'll see Omar le Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef turns to Rav Sheshes. He says, Ema perhaps, Loch, I would say to you, Mayim bodkim osa. Even though there are witnesses out in Japan, the waters are effective. Ah, you'll ask me, but the Eidim testify that she's guilty. So how do I reconcile that with the fact that she survived the drinking of the Meimarim? It's an open-shut collision or contradiction. Ha'emar, perhaps we could say Zechus Tolela. And here, without quoting the Mishnah explicitly, he is invoking the Mishnah Daf Chaf that says that in a case of a zechus, of a merit, then she won't be punished for her crime, or at least not immediately. So now the Gemara analyzes the machlokas, the debate between Rav Sheshes and Rav Yosef. But by kamiflegi, that's a classic. Anyone who wants to learn the methodology of the Shas and its lingo, this is a perfect occasion. But by, on what? Kamiflegi, do they argue? So the Gemara says that basically, in this machlokas between Rav Sheshes and Rav Yosef, we really have to understand Rav Sheshes, because Rav Yosef's counter argument that maybe there's a possibility that she will survive the drinking, even though the drinking is effective, what is Rav Sheshes going to counter against that? And he answers that he accepts what's called Misnavna de Rebbe, which means that Rebbe, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, says that immediately after she drinks from the waters, she gets weak.
Wasting away.
Wasting away, okay. I don't know what wasting away means, but trust me, it means that she gets weak. She gets weak. She suffers from what's the word in English that I'm looking for? Fatigue. Okay, a kind of physical fatigue. And she's going to deteriorate, as Yaakov says very well, over the course of time until she finally perishes. If we accept Rebbe, then Rav Yosef's whole enterprise goes down the tubes, because Rav Yosef is saying that maybe the reason she survived is because of Zchus. Well, that can't figure into Rebbe's frame of reference, because Rebbe says that even in the best case scenario that she has a Zchus, we're going to see immediately the impact of the Meimarim. This woman walks out of the Meimarim and she's dancing a tap dance. She's doing her ballet. How could it be? According to Rebbe, it's impossible. So there is again, as Rav Yosef, as Rav Sheshes would say, a contradiction, l'chora, in a case where she does a tap dance, between the Meimarim and the testimony of the two Edim. This that we learned in the Mishnah, that Rebbe Omer, Zchus Torah Tola B'mayim HaMorim, if she has this merit, we'll call it, then it's going to withhold her death and postpone it, but she's going to suffer immediately, nevertheless. Number one, Enio Ledes. Number one, she cannot give birth, even though she has a merit, but she was guilty. Number two, Eino Mishamachas. It means that she cannot continue to thrive. Number three, Elamis Navna Voleches. She gets weaker and weaker with every passing moment. From the moment that she drinks, from the Meimarim, Lesof, and at the end, Himesa, she'll die as if she had died immediately from the Meimarim. In the same cruel death, she will be blown up. Rav Sheshes Savar, Rav Sheshes thinks that Bein le Rebbe u Bein le Rabbanon havi misnavna. According to Rav Sheshes, the opinion of Rebbe was universally accepted. Nobody questioned Rebbe that she's going to immediately get weak as a result of her guilt. And therefore, you have to ask the following question. If she walks out of the Meimarim and she's dancing on her toes, how could this be reconciled with the two witnesses? Unless I assume that the waters were what? Back to number one. Ineffective. That's Rav Sheshes. So again, Rav Sheshes is going to tell me that Zchus is not going to play a role over here. There is an absolute irreconcilable contradiction between the fact that she survived and she's feeling very well after drinking the Meimarim and the two Edom that say that she was guilty. The only way we can justify and reconcile that is by assuming that the waters were, everybody, ineffective. Rav Yosef Savar, Le Rebbe, don't hit me with Rebbe. Rebbe Havi Misnavda. According to Rebbe, even though there's a Zchus Tola and she has merits, nevertheless, immediately she will become wasted away, as he calls it, or weak. The Rabbanan, the Chachamim, never accepted that. Lo havi misnafta. According to the Chachamim, she has a merit. She's going to dance on her tiptoes, you know, do a ballet, immediately after she drinks from the Meimarim. Why? Because she has a Zchus. The Zchus stands and functions as a shield, and it's going to protect her from the Meimarim. And she's really healthy. Eventually, maybe she'll die. We don't know. But right now, she's absolutely healthy. Now, if that be the case, says Rav Yosef, what do we do in the following situation? We have the testimony of two witnesses that she is guilty as accused. They saw and witnessed the crime of adultery. And yet, she drank from the bitter waters. And guess what? She didn't have any weakness whatsoever. You know why she didn't have any weakness? Because of Zchus. And now we're holding that the Rabbanon rejected Rebbe, and they went as far as to say that even in an immediate sense, after she drank from the waters, she will be protected, she will be healthy. Why? not because she's guiltless, but why? Because of schus, because of schus tola. And schus tola means that as a result of this schus and her merit, she will dance and tiptoe after she drinks from the Meimar. Just give one out, just to make sure I have the mathematics here. Again, we're trying to get down to brass tacks here. What's the machlokas between Rav Sheshes and Rav Yosef? Rav Sheshes holds that even in a case of schus tola, the waters will immediately cause weakness. And therefore, if we see her dancing after she drank for the Meimarim, what are we going to do with the two witnesses that testify that she was guiltless? How do we reconcile that with the fact that she's dancing?
And she was guilty.
And she was guilty. How could she be dancing? The answer is because the waters were
ineffective.
Comes along Rav Yosef and he says, "Nein, we hold that if there's a schus, she will walk out of the Meimarim and she will dance as if she were a ballet star. She will not be impacted immediately with any sort of symptoms. Excellent. Thank you.
Symptoms.
I'm thanking myself. Any sort of symptoms. She will not suffer. She will not manifest any symptoms whatsoever. Why? Because she has chus tola. And don't hit me with Rebbe, because Rebbe is a das yochid. He's an individual opinion. He's a dissenter. But the Chachamim, the rabbis, never accepted Rebbe. They held that the power of schus is such that she will suffer no symptoms whatsoever. No, if she won't suffer any symptoms, then now we have the following situation. She drank from the Meimarim, and she has no symptoms. Does that mean that she's guiltless? What do we do with the two Edom? Says Rav Yosef, the reason why she has no symptoms, even though she was guilty, as the Edom testifies, because of what?
Merit.
Because of merit, because it's Kostola. If you got that, then it was worth it.
You go to Top Shear
River.
Alan?
There have to be levels of schus also in order for her to walk away free.
Yeah, well, we didn't get into that question yet. That's a major issue. What kind of schus does she have that would merit that she could, according to the Chachamim and Rabbi Yosef, she could just tap dance out of the Meimar? Yeah, Alan.
I've got a serious problem.
Your first name is Alan, right?
Yeah. Alan Abraham. When this was written, it was a totally male men's
dominant. Spare me, Rabbi Osai. I'm just not feeling what? Up to, you know, what? Males and females and society and stuff like that.
No,
I'm just trying to understand the conceptual structure of the Gemara.
There's no issue here on what we brought up with. What about the husband? The whole issue in the beginning was she cannot eat the truma, but we know she's a sur. The husband can't have it, can't have relations with her because she had relations.
Okay, that's good.
All of this is just, you know, obfuscated, and we off here on a tangent about whether a woman's got skus or not. What about the husband's issues?
So again, as I said at the outset, and that's what we had in the previous year that you all think that of me.
We didn't know about it.
No, I don't know that you didn't know about it, because both myself and Rabbi Dumas were here, by the way. Rabbi Dumas was here to give you his shiur at 8:30. In any event, in that shiur we tried to explain that the husband is assumed to be innocent. Why is the husband assumed to be innocent? And the answer is, this is a Mishnah later on in Masechta Sota, is that we tag him, is that a word in English?
Yeah.
We tag him with two scholars that have to escort him wherever he goes to make sure that he doesn't get out of hand. And we rely on these two scholars to testify that he behaved himself. So again, can I guarantee you that he's the Tzadik Hadar, he's Yosef HaTzadik, who overcame the temptation of Ashes Potiphar? I don't know if he's a great son, but I can promise you that he didn't have any relationship with his wife because of the two scholars that accompanied him.
If he needed two scholars,
okay, there. If you don't mind, Al, just open the door because I have another class.
That's subsequent to her drinking.
That's before she drinks. That's subsequent to his bringing her to the Beis HaMikdash. From the moment that he Let me backtrack. We have what's called Kiddi and Stira.
Yeah.
Then he takes her to the Mikdash, and then she drinks.
Right.
So, time T1 is what we call Kiddi and Stira, and all the evidence came in. Time T2 is when he takes her up to the base of the Mikdash, and time T3 is when she drinks from the main bar. Yeah. Rav Sheshet says time T4, when two Edom come in after she drank and testify that she was guilty. They come in from Japan, and they cross the international date. Like, according to the Chassidish. In any event, so between time T1 and time T3, from the entire period of time after Kiddi and Stira, and we've adduced evidence in Bezdin of Kiddi and Stira, from that moment of on that we've established it was Kiddi and Stira, we now tag him. Again, if I could use that word, you'll give me a better word. We attach to him a posse of two scholars that will not let him out of their eyes. They will make sure that he, on the way to Jerusalem, you know, it's a long trek, you know, they're going from Beersheba down south all the way up to Jerusalem in the north, that during that 3-day trek, or I don't know how long it takes to get there by camel or donkey, he did not go into a private place and have any sort of hanky-panky.
Yeah, but afterwards, once she's already drunk, and you know that she...
I'm listening, Al, but at the same time, I'm just trying to...
She's assumed her husband, but we're not basing anything on that. This is on the next page.
She's also assumed her husband after she drank from the Mayamori.
Because she's got scud, she's still assumed to the husband. You can't have
relations with her. That's a question. In other words, she should be a Surah husband, but the mere fact that the Mayim Orim didn't kill her is a sign that she could have, go back to having relations with her.
Absolutely, and she can have the truth.
I got your question.
Yeah.
Come back tomorrow. Find out.
Is there another shoe going on here?
Yes, more to come.
This is the last.
Hello,
how are you? How are you doing?
They're showing another shoe right now.
Yeah, now I give Meshach Chachma.
Just me ask you one question.
Wait.
R6. It's an immune.